More than 10,000 people have crossed from Sudan into neighboring Chad. The World Food Program says that number could rise to 100,000. So joining us on the phone from Chad's capital in N'Djamena is freelance journalist Carole Valad. Carole, you have been to the border areas where Sudanese refugees started arriving. Share with us what you saw and what you heard.
Yeah, thank you. I saw people crossing the border every day, more and more people. Yet their numbers, exact number, it's increasing, but we don't know exactly how many there are because the NGOs are still counting. But according to local sources, there could be already more than 20,000 of them. And they are surviving in desperate conditions. It's the Sahel region, so you have to imagine it's a very dry place. It's almost barren. There is no shade, no place to take shelter, and the temperatures there, they rise above 44 degrees. So the refugees, they are lacking everything basic, water, food, shelter, and they are currently sleeping in the open air.
Did they describe specifically what they were fleeing, what the conditions were in the regions that they came from? Are civilians being directly targeted there, or are they just afraid of being caught in crossfire? What did they tell you?
Well, for the first of them who were arrived in the past days to Chad, they were fleeing attacks from their villages, and they were also reporting lootings, and also one village that was burned down. But most of the people were in the Darfur region, the region at the border with Chad. They are still caught in the fightings. So for the moment, they can't move. And that's why humanitarians expect more and more of them to come in the next day as soon as the fighting stops.
Did you see people continue to arrive as you were there? Were they arriving continuously?
Yeah, I saw... At the point in the village where I was, there was a constant arrival of refugees.
Are there concerns about destabilizing potentially Chad, where the security situation there is fragile?
Yes, absolutely. And right now in N'Djamena, everyone is talking about that. Everyone's talking about the fear of destabilization coming from Sudan, all the more so that you have the same communities that live across the border. So right now the army is deployed at the border to prevent this. But we already had some Sudanese soldiers who crossed to Chad and have been disarmed by Chadian forces. Here, everyone is remembering the rebellions which came from Sudan in the 90s. But even more people are talking and remembering the war in Darfur, which started 20 years ago, and 300,000 people died. Because the Janjaweed militias that were fighting at this time, they have been for many integrated into the RSF. So Darfur is considered to be a stronghold for the General Emeti, and also as a place where he might come back in case his forces were to be defeated.
All right, Carole Valad, thank you for joining us on the program today. Let's bring in Mohamed Bal. He's reported extensively from Sudan. Mohamed, you're joining us on set. Normally, what you do, part of what you do, is obviously you work your sources and your contacts on the ground. That's just become a lot harder over the last 24 hours or so.
Exactly, Cyril. Many of the people I tried to call overnight and this morning were not, clearly were not receiving, able to receive my calls. And that's the explanation of that is that there is this internet blackout at times and also, normal communication lines blackout. More serious than that, probably, is the inability of anyone to go and communicate directly with the neighbors. People are holed up; they are trapped in their homes. When I was able to communicate with some of them, they were telling me that in certain residential districts, they were forced out of their homes by the RSF. Yes, the support forces, because the support forces now, their main hideouts are the residential areas. So their only means of survival and to sustain themselves is to go inside homes and loot. This is according to my contacts, you know. And that has added to the difficulty of the situation in residential areas, in many areas in Khartoum.
So getting reports now of the RSF actually looting residential areas, which I think is significant.
Cases. I'm talking about
some cases,
individual
sure.
cases. People I talked to, they said they forced us out of our homes.
Yeah.
And they stayed in the homes. Is it for looting or is it for protection? They wanted to hide in the homes, but apparently the RSF are out of supplies. It's very clear that not many supplies are entering Khartoum, and they have been for 10 days trapped inside residential areas. So the only way for them to find food and drink is to go inside homes or to loot commercial buildings and shops.
And the residents of Khartoum that you were able to speak to, are they trying to leave the capital?
Of course, all of them. They want to find the means. They want to find a way to leave, but they can't. And also the other crisis that has compounded this situation is the lack of fuel across Khartoum. That could be, in a way, that could be a very dangerous situation for civilians because it leads to power cuts. It leads to a lot of services being cut. But also at the same time, it might explain this this quiet that we see in Khartoum. Because even the fighting,
the this
fighting
is something
parties,
you flagged as something that we should be monitoring.
Yes, the fighting parties, particularly the RSF, the support forces, they don't have fuel supplies for their four-wheel drives anymore most of the time. So I mean that can explain this lack of mobility for attacks inside Khartoum. So that could be a positive situation, but at the same time the other impact of the lack of fuel is on civilians, on services, on bakeries, on banks, on internet, on communication lines, and the ability even to evacuate people.
You were telling me a moment ago that so when the 3-day ceasefire, I hesitate to call it a ceasefire because there were still fighting during that period, but when the 3-day ceasefire ended overnight, the fighting did not resume full force. There is fighting, but it is, we can perhaps describe it as moderate, you were telling me?
Clearly, there were hours and hours after midnight. There were hours of quiet. And people were even inquiring, what's the meaning of this? Are they extending this ceasefire unofficially? But there are some explanations to this. I mentioned this this lack of fuel to move for the vehicles, for the army, and also particularly for the RSF. But also there is a level of exhaustion, 10 days of fighting. There is a level of exhaustion and there is a moment of probably thinking about what has been achieved and what can be achieved. It's very clear that the two sides are unable to gain a decisive victory.
Yeah, neither side has won this.
So, I mean, this might be an opportunity. Also, the other fact, Cyril, is the evacuations have not yet been completed. So there is a lot of hesitation on both sides to kill the foreigners who are being evacuated, and they know that those foreigners can be caught in the crossfire if the exchange of fire continues during the evacuation.
Yeah, and they both generals, Mr. Burhan and Mr. Hemeti, they both said publicly that they would let people evacuate who wanted to evacuate and
exactly.
leave Khartoum.
Exactly. Right.
Mohamed Val, Al Jazeera's Mohamed Val, thank you so much.